This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
We are joined right now by one of my favorite guests. Always very interesting with her insight. Susan Constantine, trial consultant and body language expert. President of the Human Behavior Academy. Susan, I want to get your insight into the end of the Lori Vallow Daybell trial, what we saw there with her reaction to the verdict, and get your insight as well. Were you at all surprised by the fact that her defense didn't do anything? They rested when they had the chance to get up and give her somewhat of a defense. What do you think was going on there?
Well, this is my thinking, and I don't know this for a fact. This is my own opinion. I'm thinking that the defense attorneys got themselves into a place where I call it rose-colored glasses. And I think they thought that the state did not prove their case. Therefore, they're not going to put on any defense witnesses. I think what happened really here was a really bad strategic move. And, you know, who were they going to pull in as a defense witness? I don't even know what that list was or who was even on it. But bad decision, I think. But on the other hand, even if they would have called defense witnesses, I think the outcome would have been the same.
I agree. I with rose-colored glasses, let me ask you about that a little bit. Do you believe that the attorneys truly felt that the defense did not put on a strong enough case, or was this more steered by Lori saying to them, I don't think the defense put on a strong enough case?
No, I think it's the attorneys. I think this attorney, and I see this, you know, because this is my space, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, there's another case that I'm working on right now. And I had this client of mine, I'm not going to mention who, but it's a big national case and wanted me to do all this analysis. And I've done it. My whole team has done it over and over and over again. Deceptive, 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 deceptive.
Yeah.
Won't take that answer. So we actually went to the jail, asked the questions directly to the client, failed miserably. 25 examiners looked at it. How much more do we need to prove to you that your client is lying? So I think what happens is because I've worked primarily for the defense, I don't know if it's a way for them to sleep at night, you know, or it's a way for them to rationalize their clients' behaviors. But I see this a lot. I mean, how many times I've seen people that have case I've worked on where defense attorneys, clearly their client has committed this murder and they still think they're innocent. So I don't know where their heads are at. And the only thing I can come up with, they have a problem with rose-colored glasses. They want to believe it so badly, and I think it has a lot to do with them. And in order for them to keep their, you know, keep their game on, they've got to think that way, right? Yeah. Otherwise, how could they defend their client if they were really holding inside that they know that their client is guilty and they're doing their best to strategize to present their best case in hopes that a jury would find that their client not guilty? So I think it's rose-colored glasses.
Hey, that's very interesting and very true. I mean, anything that you do in life, the sports analogy, and I don't play sports, but here's a good analogy. You have to believe in your team if you want to win. Even if you realize your team sucks and they're really not that great, the only way it's going to have a chance at doing anything is if you as an individual are on board and are going to bring it every time and hope others do as well. Otherwise, yeah, you can't be playing on the losing team and expect to win.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's very interesting to hear it from that perspective. What did you make of Lori's reactions? We did get to see a little bit of video in the courtroom when the verdict came down. Very still, very kind of stoic. We didn't see a lot of body movement. There's a new mugshot out. Talking on the behavior analysis and the body language area of it, what did you see?
Sure. So when you look at her body language as she's standing there between her attorneys as the verdict is about to be read, her body position in that, what I call her baseline, is she's very retracted, right? I call this the fig leaf. Her hands are in front of her. She's holding it and holding one hand over the other. That fig leaf is where you show a lot of low confidence, because people that feel confident obviously have more expansion in their body language. But her movement in her body didn't change. I mean, it was like frozen in time. So it wasn't a fear response, because I was looking up close to see if I could see it written on her, in her eyes, I call it the three corner white, where the lid pulls up and you could see the white above the eye. That would be like, oh my God, what's about to come down? Yeah. I didn't see that. I didn't see any gulping of like something really important is about to happen. And that fear response, didn't see that. I didn't see her looking at either of her attorneys to get their feel for. I think that she already knew before she walked in. And because you have to think about, you know, I mean, I don't think that she agreed with how the defense closed, especially when they decided to attack Chad. Mm-hmm. I think that she was really ticked off about that. I don't think that she felt that her defense team really fought for her. I don't think that she felt that way. So I think she had a very defeated body language stance, and it was remained that way. So that very detached, dissociative body language or dissociative personality she has is seen through her body language. So the smirk is gone. The contempt is gone. The superiority is gone. The laughing and joking is gone. The flirting is gone. Now it's real, right? And you know what? There's no portal that she can go to where she can zoom out of there.
It makes you wonder. It makes you wonder if she's sitting there like trying to conjure I'm going to conjure up the portal now and it's not working.
I mean, if that were the truth, shoot, I got to tell you, there's never been a better time to do it, which was right there to build a portal. But unfortunately, she really believed it, and she was involved in a cult. You know, and I was giving a lot of thought about this too, about Tony, her demeanor prior to meeting Chad. And she's been married multiple times, certainly tells you a lot about, she has this love addiction, and also probably not very tolerant of others or other spouses. And she gets bored very easily. And then she's on to her next. But overall, prior to meeting Chad, I don't think we could have found one person that said she was a horrible mother. In fact, they all said she was an outstanding mother. She was a loving mother. She was a doting mother. And that was pretty consistent. It was when she met Chad. When she met Chad, things started to change. And I think there was that slow indoctrination, fascination, and she was manipulated. So I think that part of her, what led her down this road of delusion, was a lot with Chad's teachings.
Why do you think it is we didn't hear, though, from many people beyond the last 4 or 5 years in her life? If there was a lot of other people beyond just right before Chad that knew her as a good mom, they didn't come out, and we never even heard mention of them even existing.
No, and I think that probably was part of her defense strategy. Maybe they, you know, because when you're working a case, you're already knowing what they're going to say, because you're already deposing these people or making phone calls, meeting them. You want to know what they're going to say, whether it's going to contribute to the good character of her at that time. And maybe they couldn't find anybody that was so compelling that they felt that they needed to put her on the stand, or to have them deposed and also to testify. So we don't know. And the thing is too, think about it. I mean, people are dropping dead all around this couple. Would you want anything to do with them? I mean, it's kind of like, I want to stay as clear from them as possible. God knows who other people and messengers they have out there that could then carry through another act, even if it was positive. We've seen too many people dropping dead all around this couple. So I'm sure that a lot of it had to be with fear too. And we see this too in the BK killer, right? And that's a big one that's going to be coming up, where we've got that witness and she is like, no, I don't want to testify. You know, on the behalf of the defense. I mean, come on, really? There's a lot of fear that goes along with it. So I'm sure that that's probably part of what's going on in their heads.
makes you wonder how many phone calls were hung up on when they were reaching out to people and said, would you be willing to testify against Lori Vallow? Like, click. Nothing to do with this individual.
No, absolutely not.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Susan Constantine, trial consultant and body language expert, president of the Human Behavior Academy. Thank you so much for your insight. Always love having you on. I want to talk to Susan again in the next couple of days about another case. What's going on with Corey Richens? We're going to sit down and analyze that video from her television appearance on the children's book Dealing with Grief. Grief about the husband she's alleged to have murdered. Press subscribe so you don't miss that conversation coming up here in the next day or so on the podcast. If you like the show, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates and discussions in the cases we're following for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.